This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizzicato pizza, and all-new seating. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com. Good morning. It is 9 o'clock, and welcome to the Wednesday Radio Zine on KABU. As Barbara just mentioned, coming up, it's Movie Talk with Ed and DK talking about the latest movies. Also, I want to note one thing she didn't say. Coming up this Monday, May 1st, you can hear special programming all day on human and immigrant rights and the nationwide strike and boycott focusing on the rights of immigrant laborers. That's all coming up here on KBOO.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring 100% natural fiber clothing for women and men. Real clothing for real people. Proud to sponsor the important voice of KABU, Gazelle is located at Northeast 41st in Fremont and can be reached at 503-288-3422.
Well, good morning out there. It's Movie Talk. My name is Ed Goldberg. I'm here this morning only, not, you know, it's not, that's not a bad thing, with my friend.
DK Holm.
Our friend and colleague, Dawn Taylor, is not well today. I hope she feels better soon. Dawn, if you're out there listening, feel better here, okay? Do we have any announcements?
Not from my end.
Okay. I know that, there's, one of the, local film festivals is going to be soliciting entries pretty soon, but naturally I failed to bring the announcement with me, so I'll catch that next time.
People interested can write you via the new KABU email address, which is
KABUMovieTalk@yahoo.com. KABUMovieTalk@yahoo.com. Okay, we have a few films to do. Let's start with Hard Candy. Hard Candy is directed by a guy named David Slade. It stars Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson. It's really basically a two-character story, although Sandra Oh walks in for about 20 seconds at the end. This is it's an interesting movie to deal with. It's a revenge fantasy. I mean, that's really what it is. It's about a guy who solicits young girls online. He meets one of them at a coffee shop. They go home, and contrary to what he believes, he winds up tied up and being tortured mentally and physically by a 14-year-old girl who is getting back at him for all of his previous lapses of judgment with young girls for being basically a pedophile and a child pornographer. You really have to suspend a lot of disbelief in this. The idea that a 14-year-old girl could plan and execute something like this is, it's you know, can she? I don't know, but it's a dream. It's really like a revenge dream. So okay, there is a scene in here that'll be extremely hard to watch, especially for men. It's the ultimate male unmailing, I guess, for want of a better word. But I think this movie suggests more questions that it leaves unanswered than it actually answers for us. And that maybe that's not what the movie's about. Maybe it's just to kick some butt and take some names. The thing that interests me about this is that the director and the writers are all men. And I would be interested in talking to them at some point and finding out what the genesis of this thing was and why women really had nothing to do with it. Now, Ellen Page is the young woman. I don't think she's 14, but she's really not much older than that. And, of course, she's magnificent in this movie, and I understand she's getting a lot of work based on this thing now. So, like I said, it strains belief a lot, but I really would be interested if teenage girls could get in to see this movie, but if they did, I'd like them to let us know at KABUMovieTalk@yahoo.com what they think. I gave it a B. It's not a great movie, but it's certainly an interesting one, Doug.
Yeah, I give it a B also because I think that they did quite a bit with very limited resources. One of the other things I like about it is that if you happen to see a trailer for it or even see the poster for it, it completely misleads you as to what's going to happen in the film. The trailer makes you think it's a horror film and only shows the part of the movie, excuse me, where he is meeting, where the man is meeting her for the first time in a coffee shop. And you don't see much of what happens after they get to the house, which is completely different in the movie from what the trailer suggests. Another thing is the question about whether a teenager could be so sharp and funny. I mean, it's to a certain, the movie's kind of Veronica Mars-y, Gilmore Girls-y, and it's having a preternaturally witty teenager, but the screenwriter, whose name is Brian Nelson, is a former school teacher. And there's a really interesting, for anybody who sees the movie and wants to hear this, if you're a subscriber to iTunes, there's a magazine called Creative Screenwriting, and they interviewed the writer and the director for half of an hour. And one of the questions was, why is she so smart? And he said, if you've ever taught high school kids, she will not seem so unusual to you.
So it's not just you and me that were that smart in high school. There's others also.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's a fascinating interview with the two people, and they go into some of the, you know, the background of how the movie came about. It is kind of unbelievable to me, but nevertheless, I got swept up with it. And another thing that Brian Nelson says on the podcast of Creative Screenwriting was that he was more interested. He didn't want to give you background on the girl or too much information about, you know, the pre-film backstory. He said he didn't want to interfere with the ability of people watching the movie to speculate and think and discuss the implications of the movie afterwards, which I thought was a kind of a wise thing for him to say. So, but anyway, it's a fascinating movie, very clean looking, very crisp, and
digital video, I think. Huh?
Yeah, I think
yeah, it's
so.
Getting better and better. It's starting to look like film.
So as you do, I give it a B.
Okay, that's Hard Candy, and it's a tough film to watch. I mean, I have to say that, especially if you're a person of the male gender. The next movie is...
If you've seen Audition, you'll probably know what we're talking about.
Oh, yes. The Notorious Betty Page is next. Tell us about that, Doug.
Well, as I'm sure everybody knows, Betty Page was the famous pinup and model from the 50s. I think her reign on the magazine covers was from about 1948 to 1954, when she then vanished, and nobody knew where for many years. But she was such a popular model that modern fans of Cheesecake eventually tracked her down, and she is, in fact, still alive, and she's made some limited public appearances. I think she's in her 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But in her heyday, she was popular as both a kind of a beach nudie model and also as a fetish model for Irving Claw, a distributor of images of that kind back in New York in the late 40s. So Mary Harron, who did I Shot Andy Warhol, and a few other movies, has directed and co-written this as a kind of her life story up until the time that she vanishes from the public. And it was originally made for HBO, and it's a fairly accurate account of her life if you happen to have seen, read any of the books. There's at least three books about her at this point.
She's very popular online, too.
Yeah, that's right. And she is played by Gretchen Mol, who she doesn't really look like Betty Page very much, but then neither do the thousands upon thousands of teenage girls who adopted the Betty Page haircut back in the 90s. They didn't look too much like her either, but she does have Betty Page's spirit, because one of the things that distinguished Betty Page as a model was her cheerfulness about all this stuff that she was doing. And Gretchen Mol just dives into the story with exuberance and vitality. And the movie is kind of pedestrianly, excuse me for all this, pedestrianly made, but it's not bad. It's just kind of a typical HBO biopic type story. But Gretchen Mol is, I think, what makes the movie so great. I really enjoyed watching it, and I give it an A.
Ah, well, I liked it too, not quite that much, but I think it's a little bit worshipful and naive, all things considered. But the production values on the film were also very nice. It's done in really crisp black and white, mm-hmm, for most of it, And it splashes into color when Betty Page goes down to Florida to work with, what's her name? You'll remember her name as
Bunny Yeager,
the woman photographer who was at least as famous, if not more famous, than all of her male colleagues doing the same thing.
That's right.
Now, it just occurred to me, I think it was yesterday as I was, you know, remembering this movie, that I used to know somebody whose father worked for Irving Claw. I worked with this guy, and he told me, this was around the time the Supreme Court was deciding on whether these images were obscene or not, that four Supreme Court justices had subscriptions to Irving Claw's publications. I don't know if that's true or not, but I report that as a funny rumor. Gretchen Mol is wonderful. She, the thing about Betty Page was this kind of exuberant innocence that she had. That no matter what she was doing, you know, tied up with a ball gag, wearing this absurd laced-up leather, you know, carrying whips and chains, whatever it was, she was just adorable. She was, I mean, I think, and she was accessible in a way that The Girl Next Door is, and I think that, although she hardly looked like The Girl Next Door, really. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed this movie a lot. This movie is at least as good a window into the 50s as Good Night and Good Luck was in its own way, because it shows us the kind of psychosexual insanity that was going on in those days. Also, what's her name is very good. Lily Taylor, who's good
at almost
everything she does, playing Irving Claw's sister, who is in the business. I give the movie a B+, and I say go see it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of people have wanted to make a movie about Betty Page in that era. I think Martin Scorsese flirted with it for a while. And I'm actually kind of glad that Mary Harron decided to do it, because if a man had done it, it may have been a little more licentious or sniggering than it is. She takes it quite seriously and in a weird way honors Betty Page for what she did.
Well, if you've read any of the interviews with Betty Page that have gone on in the last couple of years, Betty Page is, she always was a religious girl, but after she quit the business, she became a born-again Christian, and she's just, she still has no guilt about what she did.
That's right.
She saw what she did as being natural and fun and creative and artistic. And she, although she's quite religious now, she has no shame or guilt about anything. And she's a delightful interview at the age of 86 or
That's
something.
That's right. Yeah, she once lived in Portland. Just one final footnote of gossip. She lived in Portland in the early 60s, going to a Bible school here.
Wow. That's great. Portland has so many odd connections.
Yeah.
Okay, Fallen Idol. Now, this is an interesting film. I first saw this movie, I realized yesterday, 40 years ago on television in New York. It's directed by Carol Reed, who, as we should know, directed The Third Man and many other fine English films. This was made in England in 1948. It stars Ralph Richardson, Michelle Morgan, a kid named Bobby Henry, and a woman named Sonia Dresdell, who, if she wasn't the model for Nurse Diesel in Young Frankenstein, I don't know who was. This is a really interesting movie because it's very taut, very gripping. There's very little extraneous material in it. It all goes to serve the story. And yet, in its own way, it's very old-fashioned and kind of dated, I guess, conceptually. What it is a foreign embassy in London. A death takes place there, which may or may not be a murder, but it also involves things like infidelity and the Ralph Richardson character is the major domo of the embassy, and he and his wife have not been getting along, and he's been having an affair. And therein lies the tale. It's full of great English actors of the time, character actors like Jack Hawkins. The thing about this film, and I keep thinking about it since I saw this movie yesterday, this is the most annoying child I've ever seen in a film. This kid, by 15 minutes into the film, and you want to take him outside and wring his neck because he's just so annoying. He never shuts up, and he just keeps going a mile a minute. And then I realized that that's exactly the way this kid should be. It's seen from his point of view pretty much as can be done. And he really is the motivator of this film in many ways. Not the affair, not anything else. But how he reacts to it and how he reacts to the people that are involved in all this. Because he doesn't like the wife, he does like the husband, and he likes the girlfriend immediately on meeting her. But everything, he has to pull everything back to his own life. So he's drawing these people out of their lives and back into his. So you may still want to kill the kid by the end of the movie, but he's really what makes the movie go. I think this movie is definitely worth seeing. It's kind of another lens back into the past. they want to say that it's better than The Third Man. There's not much better than The Third Man, but this is certainly a pretty good movie. I gave it a B+, Doug.
Yeah, I was looking forward to seeing this quite a bit because Carol Reed's films from that era, I haven't seen most of them, and I'm really curious about them, Outcasts of the Island and the various other film titles by him. But unfortunately, it became clear very early on in this movie that I was going to be driven mad by the kid, by the annoying kid, and that the movie was going to be a little sluggish, which it also turned out to be, and also a little this tiny islandish, you know, with the quiet, calm police officers who eventually show up and you know, speak with in such respectful and quiet tones. Very, very soporific.
I wonder if they're still like that.
do they carry guns now? I can't remember what the current status is.
Some do.
So I just didn't enjoy it quite as much as I was hoping that I would, but I think that other people might. What you said was very interesting because it kind of about the movie being told through the consciousness of the kid, because that explains a lot of the things that really puzzled me at the when I was done watching the movie. I thought it was the strangest thing. I couldn't understand it. But if you view it as coming from the consciousness of the kid, what's important to him at any one moment, irrational as that may be, is what is driving his behavior and what he says to the adults. So in that light, some of it makes sense, especially at the end. But and I was really eager to see Ralph Richardson, but he, who looks, by the way, like Kevin Spacey.
Isn't it odd?
Really,
yeah.
Odd thing. But anyway, it's very well acted, and in terms of things like the story structure, if you're a student of screenwriting, it's actually probably a model to follow, but it didn't have any juice for me, unfortunately. I think I give it a B as an historical object, but a C as a personal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, you know, Carol Reed, wherever you are, you directed one of my favorite movies of all time, if not my all-time favorite. Well, I guess Casablanca and The Third Man are right up there together. Mm. Okay, now here's one that you went to see that I debated going to see but didn't. Silent Hill. Tell us about it, Doug.
Yeah, Silent Hill was the big hit of last weekend, the big moneymaker. And apparently horror movies are, if you want to create a calling card, if you're a young filmmaker and want to get into the film industry, or if you're a struggling studio and you're trying to come up with a big, quick moneymaker, do a horror film. I mean, they're more popular now than ever. And they're, you know, when I was a kid, horror films were it was something you had to sneak off to watch or watch late at night or see on a Saturday afternoon matinee. But now they're A-movies, and it's kind of a perplexing thing because they're actually more horrific now than they were when I was a kid.
By far.
And in fact, many TV shows are like the TV series Bones or the CSI shows are as horrific as horror films. You know, once, especially the drive-in ones by Herschel Gordon Lewis. Anyway, all that is a prelude to discussing Silent Hill, which is based on a video game that's apparently very popular, in which a woman is searching for her child through a succession of labyrinths and layers of this city, which is in the movie is set in West Virginia and is a ghost town because underneath there's the raging fires from a mine, coal mine that caught fire. So Rhoda Mitchell plays the woman who is looking for a child. It's clear to us, we the viewers, that she's in a dreamscape, but she thinks it's all real. And she has the aid of a female motorcycle cop, and they're searching through this ghost town for the kid. Meanwhile, her husband, played by Sean Bean, is in many cases walking down the same streets, but in the real world. And the suspense is whether the suspense is intended to be whether she will find the child. But for me, the suspense was, when will this make sense? When is somebody going to stop the movie and explain what is actually happening here? Because from one scene to another, I really, really didn't understand what was happening. And there's some explanatory language at the end, but even that didn't help ultimately because when I reviewed it in light of scenes I'd seen, that's not quite make sense. So anyway, if you thought that the kid in Fallen Idol was annoying with his screaming and bellowing, watching Rhoda Mitchell walking around the city, scene after scene after scene of these empty streets, screaming the name of her child, that's the adult version of the annoying thing habit from Fallen Idol. Silent Hill performs the two worst sins of a horror film. It's boring and it's not scary.
Mm-hmm.
So but it looks beautiful. I give it a B for its production design, but as a film going experience, it's C minus, if not D. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I lament the entry into the American horror movie genre of the Japanese horror film,
yeah,
which I find mystifyingly dull and not inactive. I mean, if you just show a spooky woman with long hair floating on the ceiling two or three times in the film, that's supposed to drive everybody to distraction.
Yeah.
Sorry, it doesn't work here, and I think it has been blowback. I mean, we've done how many Japanese horror films have been remade but with American actors, and none of them really is very good. The only one that I liked even a little was The Ring.
Yeah.
The first one, not the second one. The second one stank.
Well, at least the Ring avoided some of the flaws of these usual J-horror adaptations, in that told of a story. Most of the J-horror adaptations here, like The Grudge and others, and this one, work in set pieces,
mm-hmm,
that maybe work as a discrete unit of kind of startling you for a second, but don't make any sense in the larger overall story.
No storytelling.
Yeah, at least The Ring had a story.
Yeah, it did, actually, and it had a wonderful performance by Naomi Watts. So, okay, that was Silent Hill. Down in the Valley, I didn't really know what to tell you about this movie. You didn't see this, Doug. So
I'm afraid I didn't.
Okay. It's directed by a guy named David Jacobson. It stars Edward Norton, Evan Rachel Wood, David Morse, and Rory Culkin. Now, David Morse is a reliably good actor. He's often the best thing in a bad movie. And he's close to being the best thing in this bad movie, actually. This is good performances by everybody. Evan Rachel Wood, even Rory Culkin is very good. But the story is preposterous. It's ridiculous. It is at the same time odd and cliched, if that makes any sense at all. Edward Norton is a delusional guy who thinks that he's a cowboy. Now, this takes place in modern San Fernando Valley, America, you know, in the 2000s. And Evan Rachel Wood is a high school girl, which, you know, she is in real life. And he shows up one day working at a gas station while she and her friends are off to the beach, and she picks him up. Now, he's twice her age, at least. He's in his 30s. She's 16 years old. I don't even think she was 16 when she made the movie. And they spend the day at the beach, and he starts dating her. Now, her father is a security guard. As a security guard, he has, you know, some police training and has a gun, okay? And Rory Culkin plays her kid brother. Now, her father is stern, but I hardly would call him a tyrant. There's no mother involved. He just wants his kids to be safe and be, you know, reasonably good and not get into too much trouble. The younger brother is kind of mopey and, you know, stays in his room a lot and doesn't have many friends. The daughter is very outgoing and pretty. So when he discovers that she's dating this somewhat strange older guy, he gets his antenna go up that there might be something wrong here. And it's quickly clear that, I mean, it's not even hinted at. They start sleeping together. That is Edward Norton and Evan Rachel Wood. And he keeps telling her these stories about, how he worked on a ranch in Montana, and, you know, he takes her out to this ranch out in the middle of nowhere, and they get on a horse, and he says, oh, I know the guy that owns this place. He lets me use the horses. And they go on this idyllic, you know, ride on horseback and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that all of this is nonsense. The guy who owns the ranch never heard of this guy. He never gave him permission to do anything. He even reports his horse stolen. And then once the cops come in, then the plot really starts kicking into high gear. And I'm not going to tell you what happens here, but it's so over the top, and it's like a soap opera on hallucinogenic drugs at the end. And one of the little things that's thrown in here is what Edward Norton's character, what his real background is. And it's so bizarre. I mean, if you had to pick the diametric opposite of a cowboy, you know, then you would pick this. But I'm not going to spoil it for you in case, God forbid, you want to go see it. Now, I know Edward Norton fans are going to want to see this movie. He's terrific, but I couldn't get into this movie at all. This movie did nothing for me intellectually or emotionally. All it did was annoy me. what he does is he insinuates himself into the lives of David Morse's children. He takes the young guy out, teaches him to shoot six guns, you know, that kind of a thing. So he becomes like a cool dad as opposed to the, yeah. Okay, I'm just rambling about this now. I give the movie a C minus. If you're an Edward Norton completist, go see it, but don't say I didn't warn you. Okay, that's actually the last movie we have. We have about 5 minutes left.
And I have two announcements.
Go ahead.
To make. One is that next week, next show in May, second week in May, mm-hmm. we'll return with the DVD giveaways. So be prepared. And I've got a really great a Hong Kong action film to give away that time.
So all your Chop Saki fans.
Yes, so we're going to give that away. And the second one is that this is for long-time Portlanders. Particularly those who went to the Academy Theater when they were kids. The Academy Theater was on Stark in Southeast Portland, around 80th and Stark or so. It shut down in the 70s and was turned into the print house, the press shop, for nickel ads. And just recently, I haven't been there yet, but it's been turned into a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
I think connected with the pizza parlor next door. But in any case, the Academy Theater is back. And I haven't been there yet, but I do, for any longtime Portlanders who maybe went, that the Academy Theater was where I saw, you know, Batman serials and Haley Mills and Tiger Bay and a bunch of other movies back in the early 60s. And I'm really excited about this. And they're showing some good movies. Cash is playing there right now, mm-hmm. the Michael Haneke film. So I'm very pleased to remind longtime Portlanders about the rebirth of the Academy Theater.
What are you looking forward to this summer? There's a whole bunch of movies going to start coming out almost imminently. Anything you're looking forward to with any delight or trepidation?
Well, the problem with looking at magazines like Entertainment Weekly or Premiere or the New York Times with their big summer announcements is that they emphasize the big movies like Mission Impossible 3 and things like that.
Da Vinci Code.
What gets lost? Do they need any more announcements? What gets lost are the little movies. I'm interested in some of the stuff that, you know, the Cinema 21 and the Hollywood might be bringing along, but unfortunately I don't know what those are because they don't get announced as vividly, ostentatiously as the others.
Well, it's funny because the Times is usually very good with small movies,
yeah.
but when they put out their blockbuster guide, I mean, I don't know what else to call
did
it.
Did you see the Times 10 best list for 2005? When I saw it, every single movie on there was one I either never heard of or had no chance to see.
Right.
Because I'm living here. But they're not, when they do their announcements, they don't do as well as.
Yeah, I read both the Times and Entertainment Weekly. Entertainment Weekly just last week, I think, had their spring movie preview.
Yes.
And I guess I really am looking forward to Da Vinci Code. I enjoyed the hell out of the book. I mean, I know all the things that's wrong with the book. It was still a terrific read. It's a popcorn book, if such a thing exists, a beach book. And I think that the choice of Tom Hanks and Audrey Tautou is, if not inevitable choice, a good one anyway. Tom Hanks, you know, might not have been the person I would have thought of for that role, quite frankly. A younger Harrison Ford type, maybe.
Mm.
But there's other films coming out this summer, all of whose titles have escaped me, of course, at the moment. We'll fill you in, of course, as they come out. Might actually be a fun summer. How about DVDs? Seen any good DVDs lately?
If there was one DVD that I would advocate that people, especially film buffs, pick up and rent and or buy, it is the complete Mr. Arcadin, Orson Welles' film from the mid-50s, which has been very hard to see. And it's from the Criterion Collection. And what they've done here is it's a three-disc set. And what they've done for the true film buff is offered you three versions of the movie. So you can see how original film reviewers and viewers saw it, and then the revised version that was more in line with what Welles' intentions were, and then finally a composite version that has as many scenes as people could find to reconstruct it along Welles' line. And having finally seen it, I found that it's actually quite a good movie. I am startled that so many contemporaneous reviewers disliked it so much and disliked the acting. I thought it was fascinating, the very interesting variation on Citizen Kane, and well acted by people such as Akeem Tamroff and especially Michael Redgrave, who was a great cameo in it. So that's the complete Mr. Arcadin, which is came out last week from Criterion.
Akeem Tamroff was the template for Boris Badenoff in Rocky and Bullwinkle. Okay, so let's give a recap here. Hard Candy, what do you think, Doug?
I give it a B or a B+. Really liked it, but it's not for everybody.
Not for everybody. Yeah, it's tough to take, and it's again, remember, it's a revenge fantasy. The Notorious Betty Page, I thought it was adorable.
I loved it, too. I give it an A.
Okay. Fallen Idol, very interesting film.
A for effort and for historical prestige, but personally I give it a, it's pretty average to me, a C
yeah.
movie.
Good looking print too, it looks, yeah, really looks beautiful. Silent Hill.
A for production values and D for just being too dang boring and not scary.
And Down in the Valley, an oddball movie that I really couldn't get into, but it's good acting in a bad movie. Okay, it's this has been Movie Talk with
D.K. Holm
and Ed Goldberg. Dawn, feel better. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
What do propaganda, patriotism, juvenile delinquency, stereotypes, and smoking bans have in common? They're all topics being looked into for this month's edition of The Underground, the KBOO Youth Collective's public affairs show. The theme for this month is war and conflict, so be sure to tune in on the 26th of April at 6 p.m. And also tune in April 21st at 9 p.m. for a super awesome special version of Randomonium Ultimonium! Kids from all over the country are going to be visiting the KBOO Air Room to share their favorite music with us. And the following week, on the 28th, there's Play an Old Regular Randomonium at 11 p.m. Still kind of awesome. So mark your calendars and make sure you get your recommended daily allowance of youth.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Still to come this morning, Lori Sonnenfeld hosts Speaking of Animals coming right up. After that, Andrew Geller hosts People Rise Up. He'll be focusing on some current news stories. At 10:30, Aaron Yankee and Icky A interview experimental filmmaker Bill Daniel, talking about his documentary film, Who is Bozo Texino?, which will show as part of the PDX Film Fest. At 11, it's Democracy Now!, and the guests on Democracy Now! Today include Village Voice columnist Nat Hentoff, talking about government clampdown on the public's ability to receive information, and Daniel Ellsberg discusses the current controversy over the leaking of information. That's all coming up here on KBOO.